Good evening. One more thing. There it is. So, one thing I and others have talked about with this practice before, and an aspect of it that I really appreciate on many levels, is that a meditation practice, koan practice, Zen practice, is very subversive. And that I really like, on the surface, it seems like, oh, you're just sitting there and mellowing out or something, but there's something really subversive going on. And there's also in our world of late some subversive things going on, you might say. So I've been hanging out with that feeling and that being for the past several days, and so I'm going to explore that some tonight. And really looking at, to begin with, this idea of being subversive, which when I hear it, it's like, yeah. It's got almost a sinister quality to it, or something about it that makes you seem the rebel, the dark horse, or something like that. But I was curious, you know, as I sometimes get to think, well, let me look at the word itself and the history, and what does it actually mean in its roots? So I looked up subvert, the etymology of subvert. Because I knew sub being beneath or below, but I was like, okay, what's the vert? And the vert is to turn. So to subvert, or to be subversive, is to turn from below. Mm. That doesn't sound sinister. It actually sounds really interesting to me. You know, we live on all these things that are above on the surface, but to connect with what's beneath and to turn from below, or I'm also thinking of it as to be allowing yourself to be turned by that which is below and beneath. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, I was glad to look that up finally after all these years. I still with the light and the mwahaha of it. But no, wow, there's something really rich and interesting about turning from below, being turned from below. And what I'm seeing for the purposes of this talk, but probably beyond, what is above or what's on the surface a lot of the times, and this is individually for us in our practices, but also collectively as a society and globally as humanity and whatever systems you might have, it's like what is above is a paradigm of understanding, a paradigm of agreements, kind of, the things we've set up to understand our world. And, you know, in its basic form, there's this and there's that, there's this back and forth, right? But I think in a more realistic setting, a paradigm is a field. And we have these established rules and understandings of how things work, and there's limits to it, and we operate within that, generally. So to be subversive is to go beneath that and to operate from beneath that paradigm of understanding that we've established, actually. It wasn't really there from the beginning, I don't think. We keep recreating it and reinventing it, expanding it. So part of turning from below is to turn that stuff, to go beneath and then go up and turn it and mix it up and challenge it, really. The other part of it is, as we are in that paradigm of understanding, allowing ourselves to be turned from below while we operate within it, which serves to transform it. Yeah. So another phrase came to mind in these past days. It's actually one that will be taken up as you do the sayings of Lin Ji series of koans coming up. But one of his sayings is, face the world and walk crosswise. I like that. Sounds subversive. Face the world and walk crosswise. And I've been looking at that. You know, if we take it up as a strategy, as advice, of like, this is what we should do in response to the paradigm, and then we're really just keeping ourselves caught in the paradigm. If I'm supposed to walk crosswise because he says so, it's based on the paradigms, therefore it's connected to it, and it's not really coming from beneath, from below. So I see that as, you know, if we're going to walk crosswise against what's established, it's usually the exact opposite way that things have been going. We're going to go against the grain. And that might look like, okay, you've been coming this way, now we're going to go directly opposite and push it back against it. Or it might be getting behind it and throwing our hooks into it with our ropes and then pulling it back the other way. Or it might be, okay, things have been moving this direction, we're going to go 90 degrees. We're going to go across the grain, crosswise. But to do that, we have to know the way the grain's going. So we're stuck in the paradigm. So walking crosswise as a strategy is usually, for me, straight lines and sharp angles. But if we're walking crosswise subversively, we're letting that which is beneath, we're grounding our feet in what is beneath, our being in that which is beneath, and allowing it to guide us. And it might look more like this. A slight shift to this side and wandering this way with curved lines. And it's not really in response or reaction to the surface. We're just following something that happens to go crosswise. Just by its nature. It's not meaning to. It's just the way it goes. Yeah. We have a story in our liturgy now, in Eusebius and Gates, about the Vestal Virgins who would come out once a year, barefoot, and walk through the cobblestone streets, but they're really walking on the contours of earth beneath that. They're following those ancient contours. And so walking crosswise to me is following that ancient contour, or that contour deep beneath that has been covered up. So I like that. It feels kind of a natural thing to do. To follow that and be surprised by it rather than have it as a strategy. Yeah. So I wanted to just bring in some examples of how I see this manifesting in our world recently, and also bring in some examples beginning with, you know, further back of that subversiveness and walking crosswise. Subversiveness. Wow. Enunciate. But really, it's with the Women's March that happened on Saturday. It's the Women's March on Washington and everywhere else, nationally and globally, yeah. As that was approaching, I found an ancestral companion of ours coming to keep company with me. But she really showed up a few months back, when there was the protests outside of Trump Towers during the Pussygate scandal, or Pussy Grabs Bat protests. And so this character, she's one of my favorites. I will always love her. Because she's a rascal and she's fierce. And I like that. So I guess I have a subversive streak, yeah? But she was in Japan. Her name was Yoshihime. But her nickname was Demon Girl. So, there you go. Demon Girl. She was the daughter of a general. And she was fierce and strong. And she also had taken... She was practicing Zen under a different teacher at the time. But she wanted to go, as the story says, to this one monastery in Kakuji. Let me get the notes here. To see the teacher there. Just a moment. And so the rules of that time were the established understandings, were that men could come freely to the temple and listen to the Dharma.
What time frame was this?
Medieval Japan.
Okay.
That's all I have. I don't have the exact dates.
1100s.
Okay.
So men could come freely, but women's access was restricted when they came to Inkakuji. So if they came to the gate, they had to be tested to show they had realization before they'd be allowed to go in and listen to the teachings, because they didn't want to just waste it on somebody who couldn't understand it. That was their view, yeah? So there's these guards at the gates with these testing questions that they're going to present any woman that shows up. So, demon girl comes up to the gate, and one of the guards says, or demanded, "What is the gate through which the Buddhas come into the world?" She grabbed his head and forced it down between her legs and said, "Look, look!" And the gatekeeper said, "In the middle is the fragrance of wind and dew." Now that is, it sounds the way it sounds now, but that's kind of a stock phrase, actually. It's the symbolism there is of the mixing of the eternal and the particular. So it's like the middle path where things mix, that kind of thing. But he's really just giving a stock answer, right? If you know the language, it's like, yeah, you just pull this out of your little hat of stock responses. So she says to him, "You're not fit to keep the gate. You ought to be toiling in the garden." So I'm expecting that, you know, he's presenting his response to her and he's wanting her to come back with a different response. Instead, she's like, "This isn't your job. You need to go to the garden." And so he runs off to go consult somebody. He doesn't know what to do. So he goes to find the attendant of the teacher and explains to him what happened. So they both come back. And the attendant asks the same question. "What is the gate through which the Buddhas come into the world?" She grabs his head, forces it between her legs, and says, "Look, look!" And this time he says, "The Buddhas of the three worlds come giving light." And she replies, "This one has an eye. He saw the 84,000 gates thrown open all at once." And that's where the story ends. I'm curious, so what happened then? Yeah? You know, the first guy dismissed, "Give me a stock answer," she could see through that. Second guy comes back and he gives maybe a little more genuine answer, but to me it still feels like it has a little bit of a something to it that's not quite authentic and fully present, which is what Zen demands, right? And so when she says her phrase, "Well, this one has an eye, he could see the 84,000 gates thrown open all at once," she turns the tables. They're supposed to give her approval. Instead, she's like, "Okay, I approve you." So I imagine her at that point turning and walking away. It's like, "I wasn't coming here to see the teacher. I was coming here to do this." Maybe she was just following that contour beneath that led her there, and she didn't know what was going to happen. She wanted to see. Maybe that's all. She was just subverting, but not even knowing that's what she was supposed to be doing. Yeah? So I'm imagining these two guards, you know, the gossip going through the meal halls later, "This horrible little girl, this demon girl, this, blah, blah, oh my gosh," all that kind of stuff. Maybe the word gets back to the teacher. Certainly it gets back to the teacher because the attendant was there. And I can see the teacher smiling and going, "I have much work to do." Maybe she helped clarify for that temple the work they needed to do for their own realization, their own practice, but maybe about those gates. Yeah, I don't know. But she, you know, didn't fall into the paradigm. She didn't get caught in that. She's walking beneath it and walking crosswise. Again, I don't know how intentional that was. I think she's fears a demon girl just showed up and boom, here she is. Yeah? So you might see why she's been hanging out with me these past few days. I might see a connection there. But before I get to that, as I was still thinking about this, I was thinking another time, actually I wasn't thinking about it, another time when something like that took place, just came to mind. And it was from the movie Gandhi and his life story, but it's just the image from the movie of the march at the salt mines. If you've seen the movie, that might come to mind. But then I was just thinking, wow, why? Well, when something comes to mind, I'm curious, like, why did that come up? So I was thinking about it more afterward, and the whole nonviolence movement of Gandhi, that was already going against a paradigm that had been established. The paradigm being, you want something done, we fight. Whoever wins, wins. And then we do it our way, right? So they first started going against the paradigm by saying, no, we're not fighting. And that's where it connects to this image from the march at the salt mines, to me, where there are the soldiers with their sticks and their bayonets, but their sticks mainly. And here come the marchers. Here comes that confrontation maybe they're waiting for, but they show up and they're not fighting. But the soldiers only know when we're confronted, we fight. That's their paradigm. So they hit people. The people fall down. More people take their place. So I'm imagining in the soldier's mind, the paradigm has now become, okay, you're not going to fight, but we're still going to fight, and we're going to win, because that's how it happens. If you get beaten down, you lose, and you're going to get beaten down. But they keep coming, and they keep coming, and they're not playing against or playing in that paradigm. They're walking in a different way, willing to be struck again and again. And in doing so, they reveal to the soldiers their own paradigm that they are holding on to. And the soldiers realize, we can't operate like this anymore. This isn't the paradigm that works anymore. And that's a turning point in India's revolution for their independence. Yeah. Completely against the paradigm and changing the paradigm. So, yeah, it was great to have that come and visit. So now in our world, what we're looking at these days, it feels like, you know, a lot of political things happen on that surface level of walking crosswise. Well, the majority has moved in this way. Now we're the majority. We're going in the other way. You can see how it's kind of in reaction to, not necessarily rooted to something beneath. Yeah. And then we have this woman's march that, as I'm experiencing it and witnessing it, it's coming from someplace below all of that. Something deep. And part of the evidence that it isn't with that usual paradigm is that a lot of people who don't understand it, as I'm hearing it, they're, you're marching against something. You're marching against something. And it's like, no, actually. There are groups of people, and I was among them, that are against this, against Trump. But a lot are just marching for something, or marching because they can't. And for me personally, I'm not against. That's not where I'm coming from. It's like, what am I for? And it's not really me making the decision. I just find that here I am, because something is moving me. Yeah? So it's, you know, the paradigm is, if you're marching, you have to be against something. And it's like, no. No, that's not it. And I could feel that. I know some of you here were marching. And maybe not. Maybe you were feeling it in whatever way you were. That this is walking some deeper contour. It's being turned from something deeper than a reaction. Yeah. But the thing about established paradigms on a personal level, but in this example, well, on any level, I'll get to the personal level in a little bit, but in this group level, when the paradigm doesn't understand what's happening, I see two main strategies that it tries to do to understand what's happening. And one is to label it and dismiss it because it doesn't match the paradigms, therefore it doesn't matter. oh, that's not what we're doing, and it doesn't matter, and here's the important thing, and it kind of just labels it incorrectly and doesn't see it. The other thing it does is it tries to pull what's happening into itself. If the paradigm is a box, that vast thing out there it can't understand, it's trying to grab a hold and stuff into that box so then it can be understood within the parameters of the paradigm. But that limits it, and that doesn't see it, and it doesn't contain it. It gives a limited understanding out of which come responses and reactions that aren't really speaking to what's actually happening. So, in the days following the march, I've been hearing, I didn't see the point. Or somebody saying, did I miss something? Were all these rights suddenly taken away? I don't see it. In other words, can you please explain to me why? You know? And my response is, internally, I'm not one to engage in Facebook dialogue. It doesn't seem useful to me. So my internal response is, I don't see the point. It's like, no, you don't. And am I missing something? Am I missing something here? Yes, you are. And can you explain this to me? No, I won't. Because if I have to explain it to you, I have to go into your paradigm. And I have to have it make sense to you. And I have to lessen it and cheapen it. And I'd rather invite you to do the work. Step out of the paradigm. Educate yourself. Get to know what's really happening. And don't try to pull it into you, but expand what you've known. Get beyond those boundaries and borders, yeah? So to me, it's like, oh great, nobody's understanding what's going on. And honestly, I don't know that I could explain what's going on. Because I have an established paradigm as well. This is challenging what I've known, and I like that. I'm watching the borders expand and the limits fall away, and I'm being challenged. So anything I could say, and many people are saying things about why we marched and what it means. Part of that is, yes, those are all true because they are in the field of what's happening. But not a single one of them is the reason. Mm-hmm. All of these things are in that field. All of these things are happening. And they're making up that larger field that you cannot understand and you cannot contain, but you can walk with it or beside it. You don't have to agree with it, but you can try to understand it. Yeah? And that's what I'm endeavoring to see. I wonder what this is that that's happening. What am I doing? I don't know. Yeah? It's kind of exciting. Yeah. Being subverted myself, by myself. So to bring it into the personal level of our practice, you know, we all have a paradigm of understanding we've established about ourselves and the world. And then maybe we engage in a practice like this because we've decided our life is a problem. We need to fix it. And maybe we've tried those strategies which are the surface level walking crosswise where I've been doing this for years, so I'm going to do the exact opposite to fix it. Yeah? And so then we end up in a different room of the same house. Yeah? Or we replace it with a better idea, the better mousetrap. Yeah? Here's the better way to function. We just replace the old with the new, but it's the same limitations. We're stuck in a paradigm still. Or maybe, you know, instead of trying to fix our lives, we're looking for that enlightenment. We want to wake up. I want to be a Buddha, an awakened one. So we engage in this practice, but we have an idea of what that looks like. So we've established a paradigm of that's what Buddha is, and here's what it isn't. And so if we're striving for that Buddha, it's based on this non-Buddha, and we can never get there because it's made of the same stuff. It's just the opposite side. So even if we get there, we meet all the requirements of our Buddhahood. We check off all of our boxes. What comes to mind is The Who, the rock band The Who. Oh, good. You're younger, but you nodded. But Won't Get Fooled Again, that song. It's a song about revolution, and we're challenging this and everything, and feisty and everything. And it's like in the song, this revolution happens, and we won. And the last lines are this, of the song are, "Meet the new boss, same as the old boss." So your enlightened Buddha that you may have become with the check marks is the new boss, same as the old boss. But then we get into this sitting and meditation practice where we do sink into something beneath. We get quiet and still, and we do something that's subversive. Yeah? We get into what's turning beneath. And then, over time, and that might be a day, a week, who knows how long, it's individualized, we might find our traversing of our paradigm starts to get easier. Maybe more vast, less constricted, less confinement, yeah? And I think that's because the subversiveness, the turning from beneath, or being turned by what's beneath, is really the natural way of things. It's not a straight line walking this life and living our life. It curves and it goes up and down and it circles back on itself. And it only seems subversive because of the thing we've established and put on top of it. Without that, there's nothing to walk crosswise against. And so that's the freedom I think is offered by this practice, is realizing the structures we've built, the paradigm that we've established, and being willing to let it dissolve, fall apart, and open up, and not to put something false upon what is real, and to be in that place that is real, and to walk with that, and be turned by that, and in turn to turn everything as we live and walk. Yeah. So thanks.
Thank you.